The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening. Once again, it's so nice to see you all, and I'm sorry I didn't have more time at the beginning to have my portrait made with you all, but I will have plenty of time afterwards, as well as our two excellent authors. You know, I was born a very long time ago, and it had always been my desire, I have sometimes wished, that I could have visited the future, that I could see, you know, inventions beget more inventions, one after another after another. And I don't get to have that opportunity. I don't get to see what's in the future. So it makes me very, very happy to know that all of you have spent a little time looking back in the past. And that's what these wonderful authors have done. They have given us both a glimpse at the past and made my dream of visiting the future come true. So I am very excited to introduce them to all of you. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please meet Mary Pope Osborne and her sister, Natalie Pope Boyce, please. Good lady.
Well, we're a little bit wet. And I guess a lot of you are too. So thank you so much for coming out on a stormy night. We're so excited to be in Philadelphia. When our books come out, we often travel to different places. And this summer, we had so much going on. We said we only wanted to come to one place, and that was Philadelphia. And to come to the Philadelphia Library was like more than we could ever ask for, because that plays a big role. The free library that Benjamin Franklin started, our friend Ben, is a big plot point in this Magic Treehouse book. So this is a perfect confluence of what we imagined and what we're doing tonight. Now, I just want to clarify that I write the fiction Magic Treehouse books. So this is my book. And while I'm working on my book, my sister Natalie is working on the nonfiction. And her books are called The Magic Treehouse Fact Trackers. And she becomes the expert in the subject that I'm just sort of playing with a bit. And she gives you all the facts and all the information. Everything in this book is true. And a lot that's in this book is from my imagination. So we put these out together. We work separately. And they come out together so that if you finish the fiction and you want to know more of the facts, you go to the fact tracker. And a lot of kids like the facts the best, so they might start here and end up reading the fiction. So I'm going to speak for just a minute, and then Natalie will talk to you about what it's like to do a totally nonfiction book. Now, when I work on, I wanted to tell you how I came to write Magic Treehouse. 28 years ago, Random House asked me to write a series, and I'd written a lot of books by then, maybe 20. I started early in my life writing and publishing books. I lived in New York City, and I did so many different things. I did biographies and mysteries and picture books and young adult novels and books on Greek myths and Norse myths and medieval tales, and I just loved the variety of what you could do as a children's book author. So when they said, do you want to do a series? I said, no, I don't want to do the same thing over and over. That wouldn't suit my nature. And then I thought, well, maybe if I did time travel, I could go to a different place and a different time, so every book I wrote would be a different adventure for me as a writer. First, I tried magic whistles. And that didn't make a bit of sense. They found some whistles and blew them, and then suddenly they're somewhere. And then I tried a magic basement. I was going to call it a cellar. The magic cellar. And I tried magic artist studio. And they went into the woods, and they saw these paintings, and suddenly they could step into the paintings. And I even tried a magic museum, and a strange old lady would run the museum and hand them an artifact, and suddenly they'd go back to the time of the artifact. You never read any of those books. They were so bad. And, you know, that the key of being a published writer is that you try again and again and again. And sometimes it doesn't work and you move on. And I was ready to move on and, you know, just about to tell Random House this probably wasn't going to happen. I'd go back to my other kind of writing. And my husband and I, we lived in the city. We had a little place in Bucks County and a little cabin. It was a two-room cabin to sneak off to on the weekends. And one day we were taking a walk in the woods near the cabin and we saw an old treehouse. And it was all falling down. And we started talking about how much as kids we wished we'd had a treehouse, each of us. And what if it's a magic treehouse? So that cabin in Bucks County was the inspiration for me to go back. It was a magic treehouse because it led to me writing now. I think I'm working on the 62nd Magic Treehouse book. So, thank you. You could be booing you parents if you if you're smart. But anyway, it is magic because it's always fun. It's always interesting. And we have the greatest readers in the world. And that's what keeps us going. And today we were in a restaurant and the waitress asked what we were doing in town. And we told her she read Magic Treehouse as a child. We'll go to the airport, to the terminal, and the person checking in will see the name and say they read Magic Treehouse as a child. So we're getting to the point where parents are now giving their Magic Treehouse books to their children, and this is a dream come true. So I have to say it's been the best ride you could ever imagine, and the treehouse has given us way more than we ever gave to it. But we love our audiences, and we're happy to be here. Now, the 60th, I guess this, so what we have that's a little confusing, we have all the first Magic Treehouse books that are for new readers, and then we jump up a couple of grades to the Merlin Missions, very similar to these, but longer, twice as long, a little more challenging. And then there's one book that's way up there for fourth and fifth graders called World at War, 1944. And there you go. And that book would be like, four times the length of this book. So we have a variety. And then we have the nonfiction, which is, I think there are about 40 or 50 of those now. So we have a lot to choose from in the way of places to go in the world and things to do. I've always wanted to write about Ben Franklin. So finally, I got Random House in on the idea. And I worked on this one so hard last year, and I loved every minute of it. And I just love, it's the first one, guys, where Jack and Annie take some kids to Frog Creek, Pennsylvania. And they actually take Ben there to get him to try to sign the Constitution of the United States. They want him to see what America in the future is like. So that for me was a discovery. What would he say? What would he think? And you don't know sometimes as an author until you get your character somewhere. I was surprised at his reaction. It wasn't totally positive. He was terrified. He was totally terrified. So that was a surprise to me. I thought he'd just love every minute of it and think it was the greatest thing in the world. No, it's scary to come to our world and see cars and see planes and electricity everywhere and phones and computers. Think about that. So that's a good subject to think about. What would the world be like if you went forward over 200 years from now? You might be pretty frightened too. So anyway, this book was a lot of fun. We're going to answer questions in just a minute. But in the meanwhile, Natalie's going to share with you her process of working on the nonfiction books, and especially the new Ben Franklin fact tracker that goes along as a companion, we call him, with the fiction.
We're so glad to be here on this wet evening, and we're absolutely soaking. Someone went under the hand dryer, in one of our group who came in, went under the hand dryer to try and dry his clothes off, and I wish I had found that hand dryer. But we're glad to see you, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about nonfiction, actually knowing the facts. And Mary writes these wonderful books, I think, about what your mind can do, the imagination. She bases it on truth. But the real stuff, and I don't think I'm being too overwhelmingly prejudiced, the real stuff's pretty exciting. So when you read about Ben Franklin, And you know, all of a sudden, he's only had 2 years of school, and he was one of the great geniuses of all time, and that includes Leonardo da Vinci. He was known as a scientist first, and then as a writer, but first actually a writer, and then he was a great businessman. He organized the city. The whole city, he was called the first citizen of Philadelphia. And you all are so lucky that he had his many of his things that he did here. But Ben Franklin had a great, interesting mind, and everything interested him. There wasn't anything he ever did that he didn't find something. So he'd take he would go 2 months over to Europe on one of those old sailing ships. He would learn all about the currents. He would invent bowls where you could eat soup. He would, and it wouldn't slosh over. His mind was amazing. And for all of you who have to rewrite and write a lot of the things that you do in school, that's how Ben Franklin learned to write. He wrote things over and over and over again. He really taught himself how to write. So when we did Ben Franklin, I couldn't help but think of all the things I learned about him that I didn't know. And then I thought about all the things I've learned as we've done these books. Okay, one of those things is, I assumed, as you probably do, that polar bears are white, right? They have white fur. It's colorless. It absorbs light. It's clear like a plastic straw. And so, you know, all of those little things come in. When you start learning, life becomes so much more interesting. And the more you learn about something that might seem boring at first, the more interesting it becomes. So I'm Mary's older sister. And somewhere along the way, we switched positions, and Mary became the head person.
Ever since I was born, I planned it.
we didn't have a ceremony like they do in the military when you change command. It just happened overnight, you know. I was running an idea by her, and she said, no. Never work. But we've had a great fun doing this, because learning, whether it's learning through your imagination or learning through the facts, it's just, you know, you can do it all of your life. It never stops. And it's exciting.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying yes.
I'm glad she's agreeing with me. But anyway, we're so glad you're here. And Mary's going to take you back right now and continue on with the conversation.
You're going to help Natalie and myself figure out which next books to write. Okay?
Ooh. And this has really been important.
This has been the main reason we have been successful, I think, is that kids and parents everywhere have voted on our ideas. Now, when I first started the series, I traveled all over Pennsylvania because I had that cabin. I would go out there. This is the 90s. And I booked a lot of school events. And every time I showed up with slides back then instead of a PowerPoint, I would show my programs to the different grades, and then I would say, what do you want me to write about? And I can honestly say the children gave me the first 25 great ideas. And then it was harder to figure out what to write about, because I already had written the first 25 great ideas. So I would tell the kids, okay, I'm thinking about this, so you tell me if you like that idea. And everywhere we would go, we'd get kids to vote on four different ideas. So right now, we have four ideas in our minds, and we want you to just listen to them, and then we'll take a vote, and you can only vote one time. That's the only way we'll know which is your favorite idea. So one idea would be Jack and Annie would go to some adventure where they would encounter a narwhal. Okay? A narwhal, if you don't know, is a whale that has a long unicorn-like horn. And they live in, but it's like a unicorn horn. But they have the tusk. And it's way up in, like, Greenland. So you have to get way north to encounter a narwhal. That's one idea. So you got a Greenland adventure there in the Arctic, which is pretty interesting. The other idea is Jack and Annie go to South America for the first time. It's long overdue. And they go to the Peruvian mountains, and they have an adventure with Incas and llamas. Okay? We got llamas. So we had narwhal, and we have llamas. And then we have Jack and Annie go to a place that many of you may not have heard of called the Galapagos Islands. Wow.
I know that.
Wow, this is really interesting. Okay. And then the fourth one, I don't think we have a fourth one. Do we have a fourth one?
We'd once talked about Cleopatra. What do you think?
Yeah, but as you can see, this is an animal quartet. So we have the narwhal, the llamas, and the Galapagos. And I'll ask you for your idea of a title for that when I finish. Let's vote on those three. How many would most like a narwhal adventure? Thank you.
Two, three, four,
okay, we're getting a general idea. How many would most like llamas in South America? A baby llama that they have to rescue. Okay, a lot of llama buzz here. How many most like the Galapagos Islands? How do you know?
Oh, who knew? Who knew?
Now, okay, I love the parents to vote, but don't vote for this one. I want to see if the kids vote. How many kids most like the Galapagos? Oh, that's a lot.
The parents really added
did,
to the
yeah,
number.
Yeah, you did. But the parents buy the books. So.
Oh, that's the way it works.
So, okay, kids, this is one for you. If we did for my fiction, if we did the Galapagos, because that's a hard word to put in a title, would you like them to have something to do with a giant tortoise? Yeah? Like, and maybe put, hold your thought, because we're going to have a time for audience feedback. We'll do maybe Time of the Tortoise. Would that grab you? Is that better than Good Morning Galapagos? You see? What'd you say?
Greetings.
Greetings, Galapagos. Well, that's not exactly a time of day. You see the trap I'm in. 40, 61 books that relate to time. And alliteration.
Biggest challenge.
I lie awake night after night thinking of these titles. But thank you. Boy, that vote was encouraging because I have to confess, the next book is narwhals. The one after that is llamas. But we have no idea of the one after that. So maybe now it's Galapagos. Tonight was very fruitful.
Well, except that hardly any of them voted for narwhals.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Narwhals.
You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, too. But how many kids here... Oh, this I need to know. Okay. I wish I'd asked this 6 months ago. How many kids have ever heard of this character from history, Leif Erikson?
Oh,
well, you're going to learn about Leif Erikson. How many parents have heard of Leif Erikson? Thank you, parents.
A well-educated
crowd. Because up there in Greenland with the narwhal is Leif Erikson. You know, I like to add different subjects together, and I trick you with narwhals, and then I give you Leif Erikson. So we've done that a lot, like the stallion at Starlight. We tricked you with horses, and we brought in Alexander the Great. So we often, when I did a book on Shakespeare, I was talking to a bunch of school kids, and I said, how many want to read a book called Showtime with Shakespeare? And now one hand went up, and not one. And then I called New York, and we'd already started work on the book. And I said, okay, it's still Shakespeare, but it's not in the title. And then I thought, stage fright on a summer night. So, you know, I bring kids in with stage fright, and I give them Shakespeare. So that's the way the series has been working all these years.
Mary. Do you know the distance a llama can spit at you?
Is it 14 inches?
10 feet.
Oh, so sorry. Mine do not spit. Hers spit. Mine are heroic.
You have to stand back 11 feet every time you see a llama.
That is a fact, actually. Alpacas and camels spit, too. They're all in the same family. Yeah. So now we're going to have Ben Franklin come. Oh, did we ask him everything we needed? If we didn't, we'll ask after this. But we'll have Ben come back out and host getting some questions from the crowd.
So, yes, so what we're going to do is we're going to try to do this very well behaved, because I know we have more questions, I hope we have more questions, than we have time. So I'm going to be calling, so what we're going to ask is that you raise your hand for questions for the authors, and I will call on you, and then we have some people behind you in the audience with microphones, and you're going to be able to ask your question on the microphone. That's what this thing powered by electricity is, in case you didn't. I just learned about it. Don't be embarrassed if you didn't know.
We were having a discussion in the car here, actually, about the characters of Jack and Annie. And we were talking about how Jack is always looking at the book, and Annie always kind of runs off, and, you know, she kind of goes off, and then everything usually works out. But I was kind of curious to know, like, what inspired you to write, like, the characters of Jack and Annie? Like, do you know someone who's your Annie that kind of likes to run off? And is there someone in your family or in your life that's like the Jack, or is it you, or how did that come
about? I think most authors write from themselves, because you know yourself the best of anybody. And I have a Jack part that's very studious, and I have an Annie part that's very impulsive and doesn't look before she leaps, especially when I was younger. I don't leap as fast now, so I did that, though, when I was a kid. And also, I think Jack and Annie are in their spirit together. They're me, and I have a twin brother named Bill. And he's coming to visit us on Sunday, and he was my best friend growing up. So it's that relationship that I love, and then these are things I draw on in myself. Thank you.
One of the comments about I like to share is I really like books, and I like the books about Jack and Annie.
You do?
Wow.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you, sweetheart.
I agree. Huzzah.
Good.
How about the young man right over here in orange?
What's your dog's name?
Say that again?
What's your dog's name?
Oh, my dog. Thank you for asking that. I have three dogs. And one dog is named Bizo. And one dog is named Little Bear. And we have a new dog named Captain Wilson. And he got that name because he's a rescue dog, and he was very timid. And my husband and I thought we'll give him a tough name so he can live up to his full self.
That's good. Captain
So we named him Captain Wilson. And I think it's made him a little braver already. We just got him 3 weeks ago. But thank you for asking me.
What is your favorite place to go to all your places?
Well, Natalie and I, we used to take a lot of trips together, and this may not sound that interesting, but we loved the north of England, up in the Lake District, they call it, and the water and the hills, and it must have come from our long ago relatives, because it just felt like home. And that was one of the best places we ever went. And we've never done a treehouse about that. And I feel like we ought to go there in our heads someday.
But Mary did write about Mozart in Austria.
Oh, I know Mozart.
And we lived in Austria when we were children. And I think a lot of the love in that book came from our years there.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because we were in the military, and we grew up moving all the time. And I want to add this to you guys' knowledge, you, children. Natalie and I and my brothers, we did nothing but play games of the imagination. We didn't have screens. We didn't have phones. We only watched maybe an hour of TV, you know, a night, a cowboy show or something. But we lived in our heads outside, and we were cowboys, and we were spies, and we were soldiers, and we were school teachers. And the games we played, we were ghosts. We were everything, and our bikes were our horses, and our picnic table was a ship. And my brothers and I spent the whole summer between age of six and seven on that picnic table. And I still feel like we rode a ship all over the world as three little kids. So use your imaginations, play with each other, and don't just look at something. Invent games yourselves. It'll make all the difference in the world. For the rest of your life, you'll have an open and creative mind. It's important.
I could not agree more. I find the exact same inspiration.
Yeah.
You're always in and out of boats and water and adventures with my brothers and sisters.
Have you ever wrote a book about hippos? Because if you didn't, are you going to make a book about hippos?
About the what?
I couldn't understand. Hippos? Hippopotami?
Hippopotamuses? You know, that's a great idea. And maybe that'll be the fourth animal, you know, the Galapagos, and then holiday with hippos. Why not? Yeah, thank you, sweetheart. That could change our lives. One comment.
Wonderful. Why don't we go all the way to the edge over here to the young man in the green shirt?
How long does it take to write one of your books?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Good question.
We both write two a year. So I write two, Natalie writes two. And how long does it take you per book, would you say?
Well, you might not know this, but every writer has to rewrite their book many times. And so Mary and I send our books off to our editors and they come back with suggestions. And we can rewrite at home before it even goes five or six times. And then when the editor sends it back, we can almost rewrite it two or three times. So we have this massive printout stack of papers of these books.
Yeah.
It takes the start to the finish is for me about 4 months.
Yeah, I would say 6 months if you count the time it's actually with our editors. We have different editors.
Yeah.
We're working totally separately, but it comes together at the end when the books are turned in. And then it goes to a whole team of people, the artist, the art director, the copy editor, the regular editor,
the experts,
the marketing and publicity and sales. There's a great team of people, and we've all done this work together for so many years, and I'm so proud of the team. And then we have a team in our home. My husband and our two best friends have written 10 Magic Treehouse musicals.
Wow.
That are being done all over the country. And so, you know, it's a family affair. And I think that's kind of what keeps a little bit of magic to it. It's never gotten away from us.
I have actually a suggestion.
Oh, good.
Oh,
that
my.
You change the Galapagos. How you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that the I just got this idea that Jack and Annie actually go with Charles Darwin, you know.
The beast.
Wow.
Into the Galapagos and see the animals like first.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. I love your idea. Thank you, sweetheart. I was thinking he would definitely, they would encounter him. You did?
Have you ever tried writing a story?
We have done projects at my school, and this year, we in our nonfiction unit for Revolutionary War, I made this little booklet called Yorktown, The Battle That Made History.
Oh, wow.
It's a pretty good book, though it's only like 4 pages.
Where did your love of writing, like, when did it happen?
Well, my big sister was a wonderful writer as a kid, and I looked up to her in that way. And in college, she was a writer, and I was still in high school, and I thought, this is the coolest thing in the world. But what I did was I was in the theater. So that was using my imagination, right? It's a similar thing. You're make-believe. It's like you go from your backyard, and then you step onto a stage, and you're still doing it, and then you're alone at home, and you're writing. And it's all part of the same thing of inventing a world, right? And for me, it's the greatest life in the world. And I feel like if you're interested in theater, pursue that. And you may start writing. I have a feeling you're interested in theater.
She's been your Annie twice.
Oh, no, have you really? Wow, nice to meet you. That's wonderful. Yeah, so which shows were you in?
Night at Dawn and Pirates Past Noon.
Pirates?
And I was in. And I was in A Ghost Tale, but another girl was Annie, but she was also named Juliet. So,
oh, that's Juliet, so great. Well, thank you. I'm glad to meet you.
Can you make a book about 9/11 or D-Day?
I did D-Day, sort of. Jack and Annie go into France to save some orphans the day before D-Day, and they have to get them out of France. It's pretty heavy. But that's the one, World at War 1944. So thanks for asking me that. I probably wouldn't do 9/11 because it's still too close. I finally did the Titanic, as you may know, but that was another, you know, that was 100 years before. I felt it wasn't too close. It wouldn't be traumatic. But now I think 9/11 might be too close. But if it were 100 years from now, I would probably try to write it. But, you know, I have to do things based on sensitivities of people who might still be living. So I keep things pretty much at a distance time-wise. Because I also don't want to write about famous people who might still be alive. That might offend them. So I write about people who've lived pretty long ago. Thank you. I appreciate the question.
When are you going to write your next musical?
My next musical? They're working on one now based on the Jackie Robinson book. And it's a wonderful story with great music. And it'll premiere in a year in Chicago. And so we're excited about that show. Thank you for asking.
Did you do a bearded dragon one?
The Night of the Ninth Dragon?
Bearded dragon.
Oh, I have to look into that. Thank you. That's a cool idea.
And since we're here, why don't we stay right here and you can show your posters?
How about something about Walt Disney to write about?
You know, I did think about Disney. It would be a great story to meet him as a kid and find out what he was doing when he was young. So thank you very much. I love that idea.
Would you like to see
these? Oh, those are beautiful.
Very patriotic.
Very nice. Perfect for Philadelphia and this week and, you know, the whole 4th of July. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Good work.
Great work.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Yay.
Huzzah.
For the musicals, what is your, by far, the one of your favorite musicals that you wrote?
You mean the Magic Treehouse musicals?
Yes.
You know, there's one that was the first one, and it's so big. We took it around the country in two giant tour buses, and we had dragon puppets two stories high, and that was based on Christmas in Camelot. But that cost so much money to have out on the road that we now have all of our dragons and our puppets. And we had a ton of puppets in that show. We put them in a warehouse. So my dream is to get all that out again and find a venue that could support that show. And remember the stag flying Jack and Annie to the other world? We had a giant wings that went out over the head of the audience with dancers carrying the wings on the aisles like that. So it was one of the best shows we did, but it was a huge one. And it costs a lot to put a show on the road and to have a big show. The show that this young lady was in, we have some that, those were adult performers. We have all these other shows, about six of them, are for kids to perform. And they're performed in schools and community theater. And so they're a different kind of show. But they're the best ones for me because I love to see the kids.
If you were to be in one of the Magic Treehouse shows, which one would you be in, and what part would you want?
Well, if I could sing, I would like to be Morgan in the Christmas in Camelot one. Yeah, that's a good part in that show.
What was your favorite book that you ever wrote?
What was yours?
I think Mary and I've talked about this.
I know what she's going to say.
We're great dog lovers.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a book called Hero Dogs, and Mary wrote a book called
Dogs in the Dead of Night.
Dogs in the Dead of Night.
And,
loved researching dogs, and I learned so much about them that I'd never known before. They smell, they have the ability to smell 100,000 times better than humans.
And not quite that many, but they... But they are amazing.
I think we've had this conversation before.
I got to get Google out and find out. But the funny story on that is Jack and Annie become dogs in the book with a little bit of magic, and they become St. Bernard dogs. So I went, and I had the glorious time of visiting a St. Bernard breeder and getting on my hands and knees and hanging with the dogs to see how that felt. So that was my best research of all time.
I was gonna cute little boy. I was gonna say, can you please choose my sister?
Oh. Aww.
Why, you said that time didn't pass when they were in the treehouse, but then why did they come back for lunch when it was the morning time and their mom were saying there was peanut butter and jelly ready for them?
I'm glad you brought this up.
Are the police coming?
We've all wondered about this.
Did I do that?
Stone her,
you can
stone
have lunch
her.
Any time of day. I do. We have a little boy here, Ben, that has been raising his hand.
Did you have your hand up? Please.
Can you write a book about the Wright brothers?
That's
a really good suggestion. Thank you. You know what would be fun? I'm just thinking this out loud. If Natalie and I did our next four on different inventions. That would be interesting because we don't know much about it. And we'd learn a lot, and then we could share that with you. But that plane, good question. That's a wonderful question.
How old were you when you wrote your first Magic Treehouse book?
I was in my early, I was going to say 30s. I wasn't. I was in my early 40s. I published my first book in my early 30s. And then I published about 20 until 1992. And I started Treehouse. But I have to confess to you, I was only going to do four. I did knights and dinosaurs and mummies and pirates. And I hate to say this, I thought, this will make me some money so I can write these other books that never make any money. But then something happened that totally changed my life. And I wasn't going to say I made a lot of money. I was going to say... What I was going to say was... I started getting letters, and this is the first time that happened to me my whole career, where I got letters from parents and teachers, and I got hilarious letters from kids. And the letters were just, I can't tell you how beautiful they were. And so then I said, I'll do four more, and then it grew and grew and grew. But what happened was I changed my whole plan of life. I went from all this kind of wonderful stuff I love doing to... trying to help kids learn to read. So now we have I should mention this, we have a big literacy program that we started ourselves, separate from our publisher, called Magic Treehouse Classroom Adventures. And any Title I school can get free books from me, and they just have to fill out a form on the website. So if you're a Title I teacher or parent, you go to MTH Classroom Adventures. But also on that site, there's lesson plans for every book, there's reading levels, there's cross-curriculum. It's become a big part of our lives. And that's when we do these shows, we often give away books to a whole city as when the show comes to the city. Like in Chicago, we've done that several times. So anyway, I forgot the question, but how old was I? I was hiding that answer.
Why don't we go all the way in the back on the left? I think that might be a grown-up. Are you a grown-up?
Yes.
I can't see that far. A grown-up.
I'm 27.
A little
grown-up. I'm 313.
I'm not a parent, but I did want to say I was growing up with your books. It was not in part of my curriculum, but it was a competition with our friends to wait for library day to be able to get your books. So it was just awesome to see you and, you know, just relive my childhood memories again and then seeing all these kids here, too. Question was, could you explain the process that both of you go through? I think you mentioned it a little bit with the St. Bernards, of how you make sure the historical pinpoints you talk about are accurate and still at the same time interesting, too.
Well, that's, Natalie, you have to answer that because her challenge is to make it totally accurate. She cannot make a mistake.
No, we have on every book that I do, we have an expert who's one of the foremost experts in the field that reads the book. And Then we have the artist who has to go along with what the expert suggests in terms of the accuracy of the pictures. Then we have the most challenging thing are copy editors. There are three of them, and sometimes two. And they go through and they look at every sentence. And you have to be able to prove with good sources that what you've said is accurate. And they like three sources. So that can take, that takes the stuffing out of you. And by the time you finish, you've got, it's gone through so many processes. So many people have read it. People are checking for accuracy all the time. It really goes back and forth to a lot. We have a team of people.
Yeah, we do. And like I said, we write our books separately, so the copy editors have to make sure that I have the same facts Natalie has. And so we go back and forth with each other, because once or twice, I think our facts have been a little different. And so, there's many things to check out. And then the artist and the photography we get has to be accurate. So, and you know, like the lovely lady and little girl in the back, kids have pointed out mistakes to me. And I'm just so, I think the samurai has only one sword, and I said he had two swords, and, little things like that. Yeah, I know. We pulled the books off the stores. But that's kind of fun, too. And I've had parents come up to me and be scientists and say, when they're on the moon, they really can't be in a space station without floating all over the place. And I didn't do that. And it would have been so much fun if I'd thought of it. So I wish I could go back and fix some of those things that I've heard over the years. But, they're always said in a kindness. Nobody's ever gotten really mad.
What was your first book that you made?
The first book I ever wrote was called Run, Run as Fast as You Can, and it was a young adult novel, and it was terrifically sad. And I don't want children to read that book anymore, because it was meant for young teenagers. But I've had children write me and say, where can I get this book? And I write them right back and say, you don't want to read that book. And I feel huge responsibility now to children, and I don't want to upset them. And my first books, first four were young adults. And so, it's for a different world and a different time.
I have an idea for another book.
Oh, an idea.
It's where Jack and Annie find they go to the treehouse, and then there's a chicken in the treehouse. And then the chicken, he picks out a book, and then that's where they go. And then the chicken comes in with them, and then journeys along and helps them.
I love that. And maybe that chicken could turn into a magical person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that. I'd love to put a chicken in a book. That would just make my, that would be the most fun. Thank you. That's very creative.
What was it like writing the thing where, or the little mini series where Morgan has been turned into a mouse?
Oh, yeah, that was in the
Night of the
Second
Ninjas.
Quartet. Right. It starts with ninjas and then the Amazon and then the time of the saber tooth and the moon. And did you have a question about that? Oh, it was so fun. But, I didn't really figure Morgan out. I didn't totally figure the magic out at all till the fourth book, the pirate book. I didn't know who the M person was. I was doing these quite quickly for Random House, and I just did it. And then I thought, I'll figure it out. And then I did figure it out. They got really, pretty exciting. So I didn't know everything ahead of time, and that, so I probably didn't totally figure out that mouse till it, in the end, it turned into Morgan.
I want to say that this is the first book that I ever read. Thank you.
Oh, ever. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. You guys have been great. Yeah, yeah. A million more.
Thank you so much to Mary and Natalie.
Thank you, guys.
Huzzah. Huzzah. And we will meet you all in a few moments upstairs in the lobby. Thank you, my young friends.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, Information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.